Hello and welcome to the Trail Podcast. My name is Matthew Wordnam and I'm a physiotherapist working alongside the Trail team here at La Trobe University. On this week's episode of the podcast, fellow Trail team member and co-host Melissa Haberfield speaks with Trail ambassador Ellie Pashley ahead of her Olympic debut. So, without further delay, I hope you enjoy this week's episode of the Trail Podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while since we chatted to you on the Trail Pod, Elle. We last spoke to you last year in September before the London Marathon, and we were so excited to see that you're officially selected in the Olympic marathon team for Australia, which is amazing. So congratulations.
Thanks.
We know that like you ran your qualifying time almost 2 years ago now, and it's been a long wait to be officially named in the team. So tell us what it was like to finally secure your spot, and how did that moment feel for you?
Yeah, it was really nice to finally hear for sure. And I would say the biggest feeling that I had was relief, just I think because it had been such a long time. And we sort of, as it got closer to the selection, we had a bit of an idea of who they were going to pick, because we'd been asked to go on a training camp to try some heat stuff earlier. But you still never know until they actually select the team. So, yeah, it was a really nice feeling. And I sort of felt like then I could start actually getting excited about it, because I think I'd been, almost trying not to do that for the last couple of years, just because of all the uncertainty around it going ahead and whether or not we were going to be in the team too. So it was nice to finally be able to enjoy it.
So good. I can't even imagine that feeling. I think it would be so cool. And what was it like to receive like your boarding pass and all the Oz gear? How that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so I was away and my boarding pass and kimono got sent to home. So I actually didn't get it because they didn't realise that I was away. But
have you got all your team kit and your blazer and all that sort of stuff yet?
I think so. The athletics team has been a bit delayed in getting theirs. I'm not sure what's going on, but I think it's actually arrived today and we're getting it this afternoon.
Amazing.
So yeah, we have, and I've seen lots of photos from all the athletes in the Olympic Village already, and some of the other sports got theirs a bit earlier. But we haven't actually seen it ourselves yet.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing some photos of the fashion and the model life.
Yellow and green. Good old
yellow and green. Yep. And we'll put some, definitely can't wait to see you in your official blazer and stuff. So we'll have to put a photo on the Instagram when you get it. But it's very exciting. So we know that you've had, like, obviously you went to London, but the race schedule has been completely crazy because of COVID, and I know that you've had a couple of local races like in Tassie and stuff like that, but tell us what you've been up to since we last chatted and how you've sort of negotiated the COVID craziness in the lead up to a major event.
I was actually really lucky to get the opportunity to go and race in London, because last year there were next to no races happening, and I went not very fit after a bit of an injury, and I didn't have a good race at all, but I think it was still good to go and sort of get another short marathon block under my belt and get a race in. I guess I learned quite a bit in that, and I also got to experience hotel quarantine and all of that international travel during COVID, which is probably quite handy going into this trip. I'm a little more prepared. I know what to expect. And then this year we were lucky, actually, in Australia earlier on in the year we got a few races in. So I did a bit of track, I did some 10k road races, and I was going to line up to do the half marathon at the Gold Coast, which ended up getting cancelled in the week leading in. But I mean, I think now we're all pretty used to these things happening, and I'm okay with preparing for a race knowing that there's a chance it might not go ahead, because I've done it plenty of times before. And we know that, races will happen eventually, and sometimes we get lucky and a race can be pulled off, I guess, before there's any outbreaks or things stopping them. So I got to do a little bit of racing this year, which I'm really pleased about, because I do think that's important leading into the Olympics, just having some of that race practice and race fitness, but yeah, it's been a while now. I got one in June, a 10K in Launceston, but that's sort of the only race I've had in the last few months. So,
well, yeah. Like I said, hopefully you're, yeah, at least you've had a couple of races, and you know, that's going to be more than maybe the Europeans and the Americans and all that. So hopefully it does give you a bit of an advantage, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, so, exactly. I think everyone's going to be coming in with a bit of a strange year and a half lead in. So yeah
it's amazing that it's actually even going ahead, to be honest, but it's good. So tell us where have you mainly been based? I know you've been dodging COVID lockdowns here, there and everywhere, and your Strava's been all over the place, so just give us a bit of a rundown on where you're currently based and who you're with.
Yeah, so I'm in Cairns at the moment with the athletics team. So the whole track and field team are here. This is our holding camp leading into leaving to go to Japan. So we're going to go straight from here. We're in a kind of like a bubble situation where we're not allowed to go out to restaurants or really go out and do things other than train, get takeaway coffee. So I guess we're essentially in lockdown, but it's you know, relatively relaxed and enjoyable. And prior to that, I was at the Sunshine Coast. So, yeah, I dodged a couple of lockdowns, but we actually copped one towards the end of our camp there. We had a 3-day lockdown, which wasn't too bad.
Nothing.
it was pretty quick and painless. It was a little tricky then getting home because we were coming from a red zone, which then turned to orange. So I wanted to go home for a few days before I came here. And I was lucky enough that it changed to orange the night before I went home. So I just had to get a test and isolate until I got my results. But yeah, you just can't really plan anything at the moment. You just have to go with the flow. And I was lucky I got back up to Cairns actually before the Melbourne lockdown happened again. So yeah, but we've got a few athletes stuck in Sydney and a few staff as well. So yeah, I think everybody's learning how to navigate all of these unexpected things.
Yeah, and it just comes with the territory, doesn't it? Just have to roll with the punches. And so the marathon team's obviously there, but the whole track team as well, which that's kind of cool. Because I wasn't sure how much interaction you get with the entire athletics team. So it's kind of cool to meet all them. Do you know any of them well or getting to know them?
Yeah, I've met some of them before. I mean, because the marathon is part of athletics. So I went to the World Champs in Doha a couple of years ago on the athletics team. So I know some of them, but there's a lot of new ones as well. And yeah, so yeah, everyone seems pretty nice.
Yeah, that's good. And yeah, I'm so happy that you got home at least for a couple of days to see your husband and dog and family and friends. And how have you handled being away for so long? Like, you, if we think about how often you've been away this year, you've been away from home quite a bit. So how's that been for you?
Yeah, I get a little bit homesick. I think having a big purpose to all of these trips away helps, and I've done it before. I've been away for training camps for extended periods of time leading into a race, so it's not too different. Jose was able to come up to Noosa actually for a few weeks, so that was good. We got a bit of time together, and then I got to go home for a few days in between camps just to have a little bit of home time before I went away again for another 6 weeks. So yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and just from talking to you, I've always admired this about you, Elle, that you're so down to earth and you have this really no fuss attitude when it comes to adversity and things like that. I think that's quite natural for you. But since really, you know, becoming a professional runner, have you worked on that mental side of things at all, or has that become something you've actually put time and energy into focusing on mentality and preparation and things like that? Tell me a little bit about, what you've done there, if anything at all.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, the more serious of an athlete I've become, probably the less relaxed I am. I think because running has been my priority now for the last few years, I put a lot more into it, and everything is probably much more structured and stuff than it used to be. I probably on the spectrum of elite athletes, I'm still at the lower end of the spectrum of being organized and prepared. But yeah, I actually think I've changed a little bit just without meaning to. I guess, yeah, it comes with the territory. You kind of have to be a little more, I don't know what the word is, like, you probably just have to take all elements of it a little more seriously. And my coach, Julian, he's very big on attention to detail. And so it's actually quite helpful for me to have him, because he, with especially with this this build up, it's very complicated with all of the heat stuff that we're having to practice. So he's been really good at having a very clear structured plan for that, both in training and for the race, and trialing different things and measuring different things and how well they work, and then so that we can come up with a final plan for race day.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, all the heat stuff. I'm definitely going to touch on that in a minute. So, but I'm just really interested, like you said, as you've become more professional, you've become less relaxed. So have you spent time with a sports psych or anything like that, really trying to develop skills in that area? Or have you just been working with Jules and yourself?
Yeah, I haven't spent any time with a sports psych. I mean, that's something that I have thought about doing, but also there are so many things going on, and there's a lot of information, I feel like, with this build up to take in, that I'm probably aware of not overcomplicating it, because it is still just a marathon and I've done this before, and I like going into races, without overthinking it to a degree. But I mean, that's certainly something that I will look at doing in the future. And Jules is pretty good himself on the sports psychology side of things. So I think he's been probably secretly trying to give me some psychology lessons as we go. Particularly in some of the big hard workouts, like, he's definitely used some tactics to test my resilience and mental strength when it's got really hard, and even decision making skills as well, because the effects of the heat, you need to make some decisions during the race or during a training session to save your race, basically. So yeah, we've practiced a fair bit of that, but I haven't actually seen a professional. So
One day. Super interesting. And like, maybe you don't need to, Elle, because as I said, like, the way you can then bring it back to, at the end of the day, it's just a marathon, it's just another race. I think you're already ahead of where a lot of athletes perhaps are anyway. And that's what I mean. I think you're naturally quite good at that. I'm interested to see what you end up doing, if you do anything in the future. But yeah, at the end of the day, just run fast, girl. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, it's funny, because there is so much emphasis on every little 1%er. I think, for me, I feel like it's going to be important to try and simplify some elements of it.
Yeah, take that mental load off. So, yeah, tell us about, like, obviously there's been a lot of press about how hot it's going to be in Japan, and I know that even pre-COVID they changed the location of the marathon from Tokyo to Sapporo because of the heat. But, yeah, tell us a few things, like, how hot's it going to be on race day, and then what have you been doing? Tell us a little bit about your heat training and the science behind it, and where you're getting these ideas from with what you guys have been doing in your training.
Yeah, so we've been sent a list of temperatures from the last 5 or 6 years in Sapporo at race time, when we start and when we finish. And it's actually fairly variable. So it could be anywhere between 18 and 30 degrees when we start. And when we finish, anywhere between sort of 23 and 34 degrees. So, and fairly humid as well. So it's actually quite similar to the Cairns climate. So it's been really good here just to get a bit of a feel for what that's like. And I think particularly in the marathon, like, you can run, 5Ks or 10Ks or whatever in the heat. I think the real toll comes beyond that, and probably beyond the first hour or so of the race. So particularly in this most recent trip, I've done a few big sessions in the heat, and I probably realised that it's going to be even tougher than I initially thought. So we've been using a range of different strategies. So we've got some pre-cooling stuff that we're doing, which involves ice baths, frozen towels, ice vests, drinking slushies, things like that just before the race. So to try and get your core body temperature down. So I think I got in the ice bath the other morning for 25 minutes before I did a workout. Then I had an ice vest on for the last 10 minutes with a slushie in my hand and I was shaking, like freezing. And then that, you know, that it's all this balancing. So you feel pretty sort of stiff and cold for the first part of the run, but it means that it might delay you getting hot for 20 minutes or 25 minutes, which could be a really big benefit late in the race. We've been trying hyperhydration strategies. So drinking large volumes of fluid with salt and glycerol before runs as well, which that's probably my least favorite of all. It doesn't sit very well in my stomach. So I'm drinking like 1.2 to 1.5 liters of salt water, basically. And you do it over a certain period before you get out for your sessions. But that's essentially to have your cells at like a hyper level of hydration so that fluid loss doesn't have as much of an impact, or it will delay the onset of dehydration, essentially. And then, yeah, during the run, lots of cooling methods. So just basically pouring ice bottles of water on ourselves, running with ice in your hands or in your hat, drinking as much fluid as you can, and trying to measure our sweat loss and everything to see if we can get as close to matching that as possible with our fluid intake. And then you've got like the complication of taking on carbs as well during the race. So the heat stress, it affects your stomach quite a lot. So sometimes, you know, we're in a cold race, we might be able to tolerate a certain amount of carbs per hour. Sometimes you can't quite do that in the heat, even though your demand is still the same, if not higher. So yeah, it's just trying to navigate all those things and find the right combination and what works best without making you feel rubbish, because you don't want to feel rubbish in a race, obviously. So yeah, but we've been practicing that. We've got like a dietitian with us who was an elite race walker, so she's been really, really good with all that stuff. And then the race walkers, actually, they do a lot of testing and research, and they race a lot in their heat, so they're quite good with all of that, and their coach has been helping us out quite a bit as well. And then I've been working with an exercise physiologist from South Australia who specializes in heat, named Sam. So he's actually helped with my heat adaptation plan, which is what we use in training, which is things like rugged up runs where I'm wearing tights, trackies, gloves, jackets, beanies, and sauna. So in Cairns I've reduced the layering a bit to long sleeve jacket, gloves and tights. I had a beanie on one day and my heart rate was just way too high, so I've ditched the beanie. I could ditch the gloves, I think, too. It's a bit full on. And then we do saunas. So sometimes we'll sauna and then do a rugged up run to get our core temperature up and then sustain it. Or we might just run and then get in the sauna when we're already hot and sit in there for 20, 25 minutes. So there's a lot of different things going on. So it's quite different to a normal marathon.
That is so interesting. So you're doing, obviously a lot around heat and then cooling as well. So you're doing both things. You're trying to train under increased stress, and then figuring out what's going to decrease that stress in the real race.
Yeah, exactly.
So interesting. And so what's it been like for your body? Like, are you feeling more and more buggered than normal, or are you eating more? Like, what's the side effect for your body?
Yeah, it goes in waves. Like, I feel the last couple of weeks I've actually felt quite good, but yeah, I go through phases where, because the heat stuff is an added stress, it's the exercise physiologist kind of explained it to me that you probably need to reduce your mileage and your running load a little bit to account for that. But also I've got so much more recovery time than normal, and we have to do things like, after I do a sauna or a rugged up run, I have to weigh myself, see how much fluid I've lost, and then replace it by 150%. So I actually find that if I do that, I feel quite okay by the second run, whereas if I haven't done that, then yeah, certainly it can take you a few days to recover. And I've been really quite sleepy from the heat stuff, but Yeah, I mean, it does change your diet a little bit. You have to increase your carbohydrate rate. And your body, I think, naturally stores a little more fluid that's like one of the adaptations to, so you're actually, in general, you're more hydrated than you normally are. So yeah, it's interesting, but it's, yeah, I mean, part of it is really enjoyable trying different things. And then part of it is also like, oh, I miss just training for a cold marathon where I don't have to worry about all this like extra
stuff. Yeah. But yeah, so interesting. And obviously you've been doing this for a few weeks now, or even longer, have you?
Yeah, so I started, the first bout of heat stuff we did was in Cairns in May, and then I had a bit of a break from it, and then I started again in June, like late June, doing the saunas and the rugged up runs. And you have to be careful with how much of it you do too. So initially you do 2 weeks of quite a lot of heat sessions, and then now I'm in a maintenance phase where I just do 2 to 3 sessions per week, which even that's a little tricky to calculate because basically all of my runs are in the heat here. So yeah, I probably need to be a bit careful with trying to run earlier and later just so that they're not too stressful too, because you can go into a hot marathon already cooked if you overdo the heat stuff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, some of your Strava runs have been labelled sauna, 20 minutes, 78 degrees, treadmill, 8K. And that was one of my questions, is to ask you, like, talk to me about what you're actually doing. So, for example, that one, you obviously started in the sauna and then did your treadmill run.
Yeah, so I, yep, sauna first to get my core temperature up, and then I ran on the treadmill in pants, jacket. I don't think I had a beanie that day, but I had a fleece long sleeve on underneath and gloves, and I was at the gym in Torquay because that was also when I was home for a week, so it was quite cold. But yeah, I was looking like a lunatic running on the treadmill, all sweaty already because I'd just been in the sauna in yeah, like, hold on. So yeah, it's actually pretty embarrassing. I was quite embarrassed at the start that people were going to think I was crazy, but then you realize they can't really see you because you're so covered up that no one would recognize me anyway, hopefully. And yeah, Julian, my coach, has actually been doing them with me, which is really nice because he doesn't have to do that, but he kind of loves the pain, so he's been jumping in with me.
Oh, that's so good to have someone alongside you. Yeah, and I found it really interesting that you were saying it's great that you've got access to exercise fears, dietitians and everything like that, because, yeah, I was wondering, obviously the AIS have done a lot of protocols and stuff around heat and cooling protocols, but I wondered how much access you had to that, and if you're part of that research or ever get to go to the AIS for camps and things like that. But it sounds like they've given you some access.
Yeah, so the AIS, we don't really have anything to do with. They've got a dietitian who works there who's done a lot of the research, and the walkers actually do a lot of stuff through the AIS. But, yeah, we don't really. It's more through Athletics Australia that we've been working with Jess, the dietitian, and then Sam, the exercise physiologist in South Australia. We just contacted him separately because Julian worked with him before his marathon in Doha for his heat program. So yeah, he did that with me, which was really helpful. So I mean, yeah, there are some resources available, but I think sometimes you have to seek it out yourself as well.
Yeah, interesting. So it's about who you know and what your networks are like as well. Yeah,
and I've got the support of the VIS as well, which is really helpful. So anything I need in that regard, I can sort of access through them. But yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, and it's already, obviously, this Olympics has been like no other Olympics that we've ever had in history. It's already been delayed by a year, and now already this week in the press there's reports of athletes in the village getting COVID. We've had Australian athletes pull out because of COVID and American athletes. So just talk me through, like, how are you feeling about going into an Olympics with this type of a vibe? And are you disappointed that it's not the true Olympic experience, or are you just excited regardless?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really excited that it's still happening and that we're able to still go, and it's certainly going to be different to any other Olympics before, and the vibe will be a little more segregated than it has been, and everything's going to be very strict and controlled. But so there's an element of disappointment around that, I guess. But yeah, I'm just really excited to be going and getting the opportunity to do it. And I mean, we've all been, I think the whole track and field team that's here is vaccinated, and the protocols that they've got in place are really, really good. So that I think there's not going to be a lot of transmission within the village, to be honest, because I think the only times that you don't wear a mask is when you're in your room and they've got plastic separators in the dining halls between people and sort of minimal contact. So it's probably a little trickier for the athletes coming from countries where they don't have a vaccination program or haven't been able to access it. But we're pretty lucky that we're going to be going in fully vaccinated. And I mean, there's going to be some people that get it, but I'm fairly confident in what they're doing and what we've done to prevent it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really, really good to know. Got some strict protocols in place, but you won't even be in the athletes' village at all, will you?
Yeah, we go to the village. So we go to Sapporo first. We fly in and go straight there after we've done all the processing. And then we come back to the village after our race. So we do get to have a few days there, which will be fun. Because I was a bit sad initially. We thought we weren't going to get to go to the village at all. But yeah, we do get to spend a couple of days there. So that'll be good.
Oh, I'm so glad that it looks amazing, the setup. So yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, very good. All right. So now, of course, the always the question of shoes. What have you been wearing and what are you going to wear in the race? Obviously New Balance, but talk to us about what you've been wearing and what you will wear.
Yeah, so in training, I've been wearing a couple of different shoes. So the New Balance More is probably my favourite easy run shoe. It's like a big chunky, fairly rigid trainer. I've got sensitive feet, so it's quite good for keeping the metatarsal heads happy. And then I've got a couple of other pairs of shoes that I wear in training, like 880s. I've got a prototype of a new shoe that's coming out. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say what it's called, but it's like a carbon plate cushion trainer. The TC, which is a carbon plate cushion trainer as well, I wear that a little bit. And then for all my long marathon sessions and for race day, I'll be wearing the RC2. So that's the New Balance marathon shoe, which is, again, like a high stack cushioned carbon plate racer. So that is a very fun shoe that I haven't worn in a marathon yet. So I'm really excited about that.
Amazing. This is so cool. I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, it is fun. I really like, and I think it's probably partly my physio side that I really am into the shoes and which ones I like, which ones I don't, where I feel like they're loading me and trying to, I bring so many pairs of shoes when I go away on these camps, because when you're running twice a day, it's really nice to wear different shoes all the time just to adjust that load. And yeah, so I'm big on that.
Yeah, I think that's fine because you're a marathon athlete, so I reckon you're allowed to have as many pairs of shoes as you need. It's fair. So are you almost ready to start your taper for the race, or where are you at in terms of that?
Yeah, so this week is my first reduced load week, so I'll probably drop mileage down around 20% or so. So today I don't have to do a second run, which is nice. It feels weird. I don't really know what I'm going to do. Yeah, so this week will be a little drop, and then next week will be a significant drop, and then race week there won't be that much running. And I think the setup we have, we can't just go out and train in public. We have to go to a special area that's designated for the marathon for training. So yeah, there won't be too much running happening that week, maybe half an hour or so each day.
Yeah, and then race day. So tell us about race day for our listeners. What's the date? What's the time in Australian time, if you know it? And how can we watch? I think Channel 7 is telecasting everything, but yeah, fill us in.
Yeah, so it's at 7 a.m. Japanese time, which is 8 a.m. Australian time on Saturday, the 7th of August. So it'll be Saturday morning, which is pretty good. Yeah, it'll be on Channel 7. I'm not sure how much of me you'll see, but I'll be there on the start line.
Hopefully we'll see you.
Hopefully you'll see me for a little bit. It probably depends on how fast the race goes out too, because it will be very tactically interesting and it will be quite dependent on just how hot it is, because we're not really going to know that till a few days out. But it could be a slow start with a kick down, or it could be on from the start. So the Olympics is always pretty chaotic and you never really know what's going to happen. So yeah.
Yeah, and I'm assuming, like, I'm not going to ask you about specifics. I don't think that's fair to ask you, but I'm assuming you've got a game plan for different scenarios, and you and Jules have sorted some plans out, and you'll just see what happens on the day.
Yeah, sort of. Like, again, we can't really make a plan until we know what the weather's going to be, and when we can kind of work out, I guess, how much of an effect it's going to have on pace. And yeah, I certainly don't want to go out too hard and blow up in this one, because I think the added stress of the heat means that a small blow up in a cold marathon could be a really significant blow up in a race like this. So yeah, but I mean, yeah, we really actually haven't got a race plan at all yet, and I'm okay with that. I don't like having a rigid race plan anyway. I kind of like to have a bit of freedom to make decisions as I go and see how I'm feeling on the day, because yeah, you really don't know how you're going to feel until you start out. So we'll talk more about it as it gets closer, but I don't think there'll be anything set in stone.
Yeah, and obviously we can't wait to just watch you on Channel 7 in the green and gold. It's going to be amazing. And yeah, we'll look forward to dissecting the race after. We'll have to do a post-race podcast while you're in lockdown. But what are your plans after the Olympics? Like, obviously this has been a drawn-out build-up. It's gone a year longer than you have expected. So what's planned after lockdown?
Yeah, so I'll have 2 weeks quarantine when I get back, and I don't really have any plans after, to be honest. I haven't, for the last couple of years, I haven't really felt like I can think beyond that time. But yeah, I think I'll be having a bit of a break. I don't really think I'll want to get back into serious training straight away. I'm sure I'll miss running, and after 2 weeks off, I'll be ready to start running again. But yeah, I don't really want to make any plans until after it, and just, yeah. See how I'm feeling, but yeah, I'm sure there'll be another marathon on the cards at some stage once I've forgotten about how horrible they are again. Usually takes a week or two.
You'll definitely be doing another one, that's for sure. I wouldn't expect anything else. But yeah, I think that's so fair. Like, it's been such a big build up, and yeah, once that's done, let the dust settle and just see where life takes you, and just enjoy yourself and enjoy life again for a bit afterwards. So
yeah that'll be nice
to catch up.
Be a normal person for a few weeks.
Yep, that'll be really good. And I've got one more question for you. I'm very intrigued. Are you going to get the Olympic rings tattooed on your body somewhere? Are you even an Olympian if you don't have the rings tattooed?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not really, but yeah, I don't know. This is probably the one time I would consider it, but I don't know where I would get it, and it would be very small, and I'm still not even sure that I want that.
I think you should do it, and I think we'll run a competition about where should Ellie get the rings tattooed on her body.
We had a fun conversation at dinner the other night, actually. There were about eight of us sitting around a table, and all of us, I think it was our first Olympics, maybe other than one person, and we were all, just deciding if we were going to get it, where we'd get it, and yeah.
Black and white, or in colours. There's so many decisions to make.
Yeah, there's a lot of different options. But yeah, I never would judge anyone for having Olympic rings tattooed, but I feel like I'd be a little bit embarrassed about it as well. So maybe somewhere where.
Why? It's an amazing achievement. I think it's so amazing, and you should definitely do it. Maybe the top of your leg, top of your quads.
Yeah, we'll see.
Very good. Well, I'm fresh out of questions, unless there's something burning that I missed that you think's interesting to talk about. But
no, I don't think so. I think we covered all the interesting stuff with the heat and the.
It's so interesting, that all the heat stuff. That's really crazy. But yeah,
I found it a bit, at times I've almost found it a bit overwhelming, all the information, and it's better now that I've had like a few weeks to try things and, you know, rule out some things that I don't want to do and make some decisions on that. I feel a bit better, but at the start it's quite a lot of new things to try.
Did you watch any of the tour, because they were even doing a lot of that stuff before the time trial? They had the ice vest on and they were putting ice like down the back of their shirts while they were riding and stuff like that. So yeah, it's obviously done.
Oh yeah, and those guys are like they've got the highest level of sort of research and science into what they're doing. So yeah, it's a big thing these days. It'll be interesting to see actually how many of the countries are using it and whether it's everyone or only sort of a select few. So
yeah. My guess is it'll probably be the well-resourced countries, like
I'd say so.
Research, but who knows? It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, all right. I know you've got a massage to get off to, so instead of your seminar today, you've got a massage. # professional athlete life.
Yeah, I got to milk it for my last few weeks.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please feel free to share it with family and friends with or without knee pain. If you're interested in learning more, head to the Latrobe Sport and Exercise Medicine Research Centre's Twitter account at LatrobeSEM. You can also find us on Facebook at LatrobeSEMRC. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for the next instalment of The Trail.